you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
On the line, we have a senior professor at the Center for Gender and African Studies at the University of the Free State, Professor Hussein Solomon. And you may remember that we've been having this conversation where the U.S. president has decided to name what is happening in Nigeria as a Christian genocide. We just thought, you know, and we are obviously seeing the reaction from Nigerian citizens, very, very upset with this coining of what is happening in Nigeria. Let me just ask you, Prof, are you surprised by Donald Trump's utterances?
No, I'm not surprised, because he's been making a number of inaccurate depictions of Africa, including, you would recall, the so-called Afrikaner genocide in our own country.
Of course. And I mean, I think it's good for us to give all of this a bit of context and maybe start by... We have a sense here in South Africa how our problems began. You know, there's a certain group of people who obviously went and lobbied for all of this. In the United States, where did all of this begin, this idea that there's a Christian genocide in Nigeria?
Okay, so there's a late-night talk show host called Bill Maher. And Bill Maher started to talk of a Christian genocide happening in Nigeria, which, according to him, Boko Haram was killing and targeting Christians since 2009. And of course, this was picked up by social media and by the broader MAGA movement. And then you had Ted Cruz, the Republican senator, talking about these massacres of Christians. And he introduced a bill in the Congress to sanction the Nigerian state, saying that they're either ignoring or enabling this taking place. And then, of course, Trump came in labeling that a Christian genocide, and then speaking to the Pentagon to look at various military options against the Nigerian state.
Mm. So before we get to why he's actually interested in Nigeria, let's talk about what's actually really happening in Nigeria. Areas that they speak of, we've obviously been watching for decades now, for some time, where you had the Chibok girls who were abducted, and there has been a lot of tension there, and also lots of activity by Boko Haram, I think officially since the 2019, I think. So let's give it a bit more context. What actually is going on there?
Look, certainly Christians have been killed. Certainly churches have been burned to the ground. But it's also true, as the Nigerian government points out, that more Muslims have been killed by the likes of Boko Haram, not only Boko Haram, because there's other militant groups operating there. Just this weekend, for example, 200 people were killed in fighting between Boko Haram and the Islamic State for West Africa province.
Mm.
And of course, the Nigerian authorities has been unable to quell the violence, and that has been the norm since 2009.
Mm.
Since this violent trajectory of Boko Haram. But what you need to understand in terms of Nigeria is that ethnicity in many ways matters more.
Mm.
So, for example, there were various studies pointing out that people were being targeted because of their respective ethnicity,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to faith.
Mm-hmm.
Faith is secondary. And there's also economic considerations, mm-hmm. right? So, for example, desertification is real. There's a shortage of arable land. There's conflicts between herders and farmers.
Mm.
And the herders belong to one ethnic group, the farmers to another. But at the same time, they belong to different faith traditions. So it's important to unpack all of this, as opposed to just focus on the religious overtone, because in my view, I think that Donald Trump is appealing to his MAGA base, you know, Make America Great base, and his constituency, as opposed to actually coming up with a proper policy for a very complex problem.
Let's talk about how Abuja is managing all of this, because I think they've been struggling for a while, low morale in the army, you know, not enough resources, and obviously a lot of managing how everybody else gets to interpret what the army is doing in some of these parts of Nigeria. Maybe your sense of how the government itself is managing all of the conflicts.
Look, successive governments have failed spectacularly. Part of the problem, when you talk about low morale, I mean, there is corruption even in the military. Mm-hmm. So you have soldiers not getting their stipends, soldiers not getting their food on time. You also have a situation where the Nigerian military is not capable of dealing with a very mobile guerrilla warfare tactics being utilized by these groups. Another thing is the technological sophistication of these groups. So, for example, in 2009, when they started their military campaign, Boko Haram was using poisoned arrows fired off the back of a motorcycle. Now they are using IEDs, improvised explosive devices. They are using drones. And the Nigerian military has been unable to adapt to these technological advances by these terror groups.
So many of these conflicts are generally proxy wars, right? So the question here is, in relation to Boko Haram, whose interests are they serving?
Well, you know, the issue of proxy wars, so obviously Boko Haram is related to Al-Qaeda, Islamic State West Africa province, the other major group, and there's a turf battle going on between them, is linked to Islamic State. Then you have all of the other interests operating there, meaning you have tensions, as you know, between the Americans and the French versus the Russians, and increasingly the Chinese and other such countries operating in the region, fighting for influence. But in terms of Nigeria specifically, you know, the issue of the Islamist militants is not something new. It goes back to 1802, when Uthman Danfodio started his jihad, you know, and established the Sokoto Caliphate, etc. And that has been ongoing, this in terms of northern Nigeria. And even when the British colonized Nigeria, it was ruled differently. So, for example, there was almost a Western-style government in the Christian South, but in the northern regions, the British allowed the emirs a fair degree of autonomy. And so you have these fault lines operating on a regional basis, ethnic basis, and of course, the religious basis. But then on top of that, you also have the issue of economics, fighting for pasture lands, fighting to extort bribes from locals, from fishermen, from loggers, from businesses, and so on. And so this is an extremely problematic issue, which no military can resolve. You need a more holistic solution, which is not coming from Abuja, but it's also not coming from Washington, D.C. at the moment, which just thinks that every problem can be resolved with military might.
And so what's in it for Donald Trump?
You know, I'm not sure what's in it for Donald Trump, because this is, I think, hurting the Americans, okay? The Americans are losing influence across the African continent. You know, you find the Americans, for example, they are not coming for the G20. Vice President Vance was supposed to come visit Kenya and South Africa, and he's not coming, and so on and so forth. And I think it's a case of Donald Trump sitting up, watching Bulmer speak about the Christian genocide, and then tweeting something, you know, and then the Twitter universe erupts, etc. And then you have, I'm sorry to say, politically opportunistic American politicians jumping on the bandwagon, and saying, well, this will go well with my constituency and defending Christian interests. You know, as if we are back to the good old Crusades, except on the African continent this time around. And as a result, you know, I think all of this is actually hurting America. And Donald Trump will just get a little bump maybe in certain constituencies in terms of his popularity. But I don't think, you know, this is good for America, actually, either.
You know, you speak of, obviously, how America and Americans are starting to lose influence in the continent. I mean, we South Africans know how we felt when the lie, you know, started making some sort of, headlines around the world. How are Nigerians feeling about all of this?
Well, first of all, so here's the interesting thing. I mean, the Nigerians actually understand that the Americans, they don't like the government. I mean, the government is extremely corrupt. But at the same time, they're proudly Nigerian. And at the same time, they know it's wrong. For example, you know, many of the top generals, the top admirals from the Defense Force to the intelligence services are Christian generals. The president himself is a Muslim, but he's married to a Christian pastor of a Pentecostal church. You know, the bishop, the Catholic bishop of Sokoto, which is a Muslim majority state in which a tiny Christian minority coexists, said this was just not correct, and so forth. And the Nigerians questing these numbers, you know, coming from talk show hosts, coming from social media about the number of Christians killed. Many have felt that there was a conflation of numbers of people generally killed with saying, well, all the victims of Boko Haram have to be Christian. And it's simply not true. And I think they have, I don't think they've liked it very much. I think that they are a proud nation, a proud people. And while recognizing the inadequate responses of the Nigerian government, I think they've largely rallied around the Nigerian government against this, I'm sorry to say, stupid remarks by the American president.
And how is the government officially then, you know, planning on dealing with all of this?
The Nigerian government is in a bit of a pickle. Because while they are obviously angry, and the advisor in the president's office, you know, did a formal rebuttal of the allegations and so on, they also need the Americans, you know, in terms of the issue of economics, the way the region has changed. You remember all the military coups in West Africa, mm-hmm. and Nigeria wanting to, you know, invade Niger, imposing a blockade on Niger, amongst the other countries there and so on. ECOWAS, for example, is no longer, that economic community of West African states, is no longer, you know, functioning in that region in the sense that it's split now. There's another formation which is challenging that, which is the Alliance of Sahel States. So whilst the Nigerian government does not feel too happy with the Americans, at the same time, they do need the Americans economically, strategically, militarily, and so on.
And so I suppose they're a bit stuck in how they're reacting, because I must say, I haven't heard a very assertive response from the Nigerian government. And so I was wondering what you think the plan is there.
Well, it's been a very muted response. Yeah. There's been a very, from the presidential advisor's office, there's been, you know, a rebuttal, but in very formal diplomatic terms, you know. And that suggests to me that they are trying to still keep the doors open with the Americans for further dialogue on this issue and so forth. I mean, to be honest, it's very much like us, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, in terms of, oh, now we're going to put sanctions, now we're going to put tariffs, yeah, and so on. Oh, yes, now we're going to send a special envoy. Mm. Now we're going to start a dialogue. So the ours was also very much like the Nigerians, because while you're not exactly happy with the American administration or the Trump administration's position, at the same time, you know, you want access to markets and the like.
Well, maybe the bigger question is, what can they do? I think we've tried a lot. We are not achieving much. In fact, I think, you know, the rumor continues to gain more momentum, and we are more shunned now than maybe a couple of months ago. And so what can Nigeria actually do?
Well, they are not in a good place.
Yes.
So you have this formal rebuttal and saying, oh, it's not true, and the stats is wrong, and you don't understand that there's been more Muslims killed than Christian, and don't you understand that you have all of these Christian generals who will not go and engage in a genocide against their own people and so forth. But at the same time, they are trying to endear themselves with the Americans and trying to find out exactly what would appease Donald Trump. The problem, though, is from a policy perspective, Trump is a very material character. Mm. So today you find, okay, this is what will what's needed for him to just keep quiet. And actually, the next day he wakes up and there's another social media influencer or there's another talk show host, and then he says, okay, right, this is it. And there's almost, you know, what I see in America right now is almost a personality cult. And, I mean, unlike in previous Democrat and Republican administrations, where there was divisions within the administration and where people could actually, you know, speak their mind without consequences in terms of furthering American interests, people inside the American administration seem to me to be scared of Trump, and they will not go against him, and they don't want to say something to say, hey, this is a stupid policy, it's actually hurting American interests. So we are in a very, very difficult situation, and it's not just in terms of Africa. Although, if you look at their position in terms of climate change, they are not in Brazil right now.
They're not
for the COP30. I'm sorry to use the phrase, but it's not my phrase, it's Donald Trump's phrase. But frankly, Donald Trump has treated Africa and Africans with disdain from his first administration.
I remember
if
that.
You would recall the shithole.
Don't repeat it, Prof.
Okay, and I'm sorry to use it, but it's kind of gone into the lexicon. Okay. And I think it's extremely problematic, you know, because how do we relate to it? I mean, it's not just Africans. I mean, look at how he has viewed Mexicans, you know. All people of a darker pigmentation. And, you know, and I think this will just simply push America further and further on the periphery in terms of influence on the African continent, but generally in terms of the global south.
Sure. It was lovely talking to you. I really appreciate you unpacking it so wonderfully for us. Thank you very, very much, Dr. Hussein Solomon. I thank you. I really appreciate your time this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. He is a senior professor at the Center for Gender and African Studies at the University of the Free State.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.